When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
It's a mammoth episode of 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
I saw what you did there.
Yes. It's happened. The name for the Utah Hockey Club is in the midst of being transferred over to the Mammoth.
What do you think?
I'm not crazy about it. I wanted Utah Hockey Club. I really did.
Yawn. Utah Hockey Club. What are we, hold a soccer
on
team?
Are you going all young kid on me? Yawn.
Well, no, that's me. You know, we're not a soccer team. We need team names, you know.
But you can still have it. Anyway.
I was actually hoping for Outlaws, but having seen the Mammoth logo and the tusks, it's a nice logo. I can live with Mammoth. I wanted Outlaws, but I could live with Mammoth. I just hope Armstrong, and that's Chris Armstrong, just sends us like swag. We need
your buddy.
Swag.
Yeah. We do. Yeah.
We need swag. That's all we need. So
anytime you can use the word tusks, though, that
tusks
that's
is a good word.
A good day.
Yeah.
Right?
Tusks up.
And all
I
those
guess we could do tusks up. You know?
Tusk. Oh yeah. Very right, good.
Yeah, sure.
We all have that one friend who loves the trivia question. Name five teams whose nickname doesn't end in S. Now we got another one.
Well, and here's the thing. When I was a child, if you named a team without an S, it was heresy. That would have never happened. You know, the Chicago Red Sox, or White Sox rather, and the Boston Red Sox, they were the only two teams that didn't end with S's. And then the Utah Jazz, or in those days, the New Orleans Jazz came along and changed the whole concept of it. So, but names are good, and listen, they've done okay with creating some level of interest and news. Their sales of sweaters and memorabilia has been tremendous in Salt Lake City. This will only exacerbate it. So they've done a pretty good job there. But I Mammoth's okay. Not my favorite, but we can live with Mammoth.
I'm trying to get a beat on you right now because you wanted Outlaw, but Mammoth is okay.
I wanted Outlaws.
There are four teams that that have a name without an S.
Now, but hold on. You're talking in the four major professional sports? Because, you know, the
NHL.
MLS. NHL. Oh, I'm not in that mode yet. So I'm not in that mode.
Well,
sorry.
Think about it.
No, I can't. I'm studying up my questions for Mike Keenan.
That's what I mean. I'll come back to it after we chat with Keenan and see if you can name them.
Oh, that's a lot of work.
Every time I talk to Mike, and it seems like it's every couple of years that I'm able to catch up with him for on the record conversation. It comes up that he's not coaching and he could still coach? Do you think it raises its head again? Because I think he is going to believe that he could coach until the very end.
It'll only be talked about if you bring it up.
Well, that's good. Because if it's not brought up,
you're going to bring
I'll ask him. I'll ask him.
I know.
Because I love his confidence. Iron Mike. And we want to talk to Mike because of the goalie situation in Toronto and going back a number of years to our buddy Nick Kypreos falling on Grant Fuhr and how you handle that kind of fallout. Yep. One of the great performances of all time, Nick flying into Grant Fuhr in 1996. Iron Mike is standing by, and then we'll reconnect with John Shannon on nicknames that end without an S. You think about it as
in the National Hockey League.
In the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
You think about it as the listeners, too, and see if you can name the four other teams. It's just be quiet and have some fun for a change, okay?
I always have fun. It's
just have some fun.
You get too serious. My goodness gracious.
Sick Iron Mike on you. Keenan's next on 100% Hockey with Millard and the Grumpy Guy.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Not many better to take us inside the experience of coaching in the Stanley Cup playoffs than Iron Mike Keenan. How different, Mike, is...
Hold on. Before we ask the question about hockey... We got to ask, we got to ask the personal question. The last time you were on the old show, Mike, you had just come out of hospital.
Yes.
You had open heart surgery.
Correct.
How are you feeling?
Yeah. Okay. I'm feeling great. I just had my annual checkup and everything is super. I was very fortunate to have a superstar operate on me, Dr. Girardi in Presbyterian, New York. And I had CT scans, ultrasounds, EKGs, everything is super. Doing well.
Good. Good to hear. Okay. Darren, you can ask the tough questions now.
Well, not much tops a clean bill of health like that, but from the regular season to the Stanley Cup playoffs, how would you rate the difference for a National Hockey League coach?
Well, Wayne Gretzky described the season, if you like, and segmented it to preseason, season, first, second, and third round, and then the finals. And all segments have different skill sets that are required to coach at that level. And as you can see, you're now in the second round, the intensity level, the competitiveness amongst the athletes and the teams is heightened, and you have to now concentrate on one team as opposed to, for example, the regular season. You have a cadence or a rhythm, and you follow that rhythm from team to team, and you travel from city to city if you're on the road or you go back home. But now you're focusing on one team only, and that there is a greater amount of scrutiny, knowledge about what to expect. And I've always asked the question to all of our hockey listeners, how many minutes are there in a hockey game in regulation time? And most people will say 60. Well, the reality is there's 720 because you got 360 to disperse on your side, and the opposing team has the same because you got six players on the ice without penalties. So penalty free, it's 360 you give. And people always joke, you usually give a goalie 60 and then distribute the other 300. So your job as a coach is you should have the knowledge and the skill set to understand how you're going to distribute your minutes and also how the opposition's going to distribute their minutes and who's going to play in different situations. So you should rehearse all of those situations that arrive or you can anticipate to the best of your ability for every single game.
So one of the reasons we wanted you on this week was because of the Sam Bennett, Anthony Stolarz incident.
Yep.
And obviously with friends that we have, and we know you, that the Nick Kyprios Grant Fuhr event came to mind.
Yeah. Accidentally on purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. Accidentally on purpose. But so the question becomes for me, and Darren can ask and take it any way he wants. The question asked for me, I still remember this. I was standing in a vomitory at the Gardens the day between games, after the game, and you and I were standing there, and I said, you're making a lot out of this. And you said, yep. And in fact, what it did for you, I believe, it became a distraction. So nobody was talking about whether your team was winning or losing. And so the players could actually focus on the game. Is there a conscious effort to do that?
Well, I think that you, as a coach, you try to manage every single incident or situation that arises during a game to take a certain level of advantage, if you like, whether it's a distraction to get away from maybe the expectations of your team and or part of it would be to really magnify the situation so that the officials are very, very, very aware. So they play a big part in every game. They miss calls or they don't, or they make calls that they shouldn't and so on. And it's, they're not infallible. They do all they can, but it's a fast moving game. So there's a lot of different variables that go into your decision-making and then how you deliver that publicly to, in my opinion, try to set some kind of advantage for your team.
So would you consciously make more out of a situation than it was because of the direction to use it as an advantage for your team or take heat off your team?
Well, it can work in either way, but, ultimately.
What did you do way back when?
Well, ultimately, when we put John Casey in, it became problematic. And John, God bless John, he played as well as he could. But from that moment on, when Grant went down, I could feel and sense and knew that the team played with reservation. They were on their heels more than they were on their toes. And Gretzk often said that, he's come out to say if we had Grant, we would have won the Stanley Cup. That we felt that confident in our team, and we had, as you know, superstar Hall of Famers on that club. Mm-hmm. But even on the bench, I could sense there was reservation about how we would play because of that incident. So you try to encourage them, or you try to set up the dynamics in your locker room and or on the bench or game decision-making or bench management, they call it, I think, today, that would try to have a positive impact on your team.
How much practicing, how much tactics you do? And I ask that in reference to the chess match between games between coaches?
Well, some coaches don't pay as much attention to it as others, but then there's many, or I don't know how involved they are today. I hope that they are, but it certainly is an advantage. If you, I was highly skilled at bench management, and I was cross-examined on a daily basis when I was in Rochester by a fellow named Bowman. And Scotty would get on the phone on the way home after every game and ask me, why was Bob Mongrain killing that penalty with only 43 seconds left in the second period? So, you know, you and that's a skill that you can learn. It's a learned skill. And over time, if you pay attention to it, it's a real advantage. Now, some coaches don't have as acute a skill as others. And it's also a reflection maybe of your mathematical, and I just tried to describe it a little bit previously in our comments, that it's a mathematical skill set as well to know. John, after a game, I could tell you without looking at a computer or timing or timekeepers or whatever you call them at the time, was within 30 seconds, I could tell you what everybody played on both teams. So I had this mathematical skill that I had honed and studied, and I think it's important.
Did you chase matchups?
Well, home and away is first of all, is a very important factor. And I would, in a road game, I would, and you saw it in Canada Cup 87, the number of different combinations that I used. So I would never try to give the opposition any insight into what to expect. Expect the unexpected. And I use that often. And I also would really work the cadence of the game in terms of the rhythm and the officials. When I first started in the league, I put out 10 hockey players because the referees didn't have their hand up at that time. And it was a way sometimes to get the matchup I wanted, or to rest a Mark Howe, who was playing 30 minutes a game minimum. So there was a lot of different gyrations and methods. And then as the game evolved and they wouldn't let us do that anymore, I would always be asking what part of the assistant coach's role. I would be communicating with the assistant coaches continuously to get a rhythm or get a sense of what they are going to do, who's going to be next.
That 10 guys in the ice, Mike, sounds like right out of the Roger Nielsen playbook.
No, Roger was more honest than that. That's probably
Roger's more honest than that. Let's throw eggs on the ice.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. I would say it'd be more of a Bowman thing, but I started doing that when I was coaching junior hockey. So
how would that work? Like your guys just new, or you would literally yell out 10 guys?
Call two lines.
Yeah, I would in a stoppage, like, not obviously you can't have too many men on the ice, but a stoppage, I'd put out one line and then I'd send out the next line, and then I'd bring a set in, and Mark Howell would go to sit down, and he would sit down for 30 seconds and I put him back out because we wanted him up against Mike Bossy, for example. So in the Oilers series, in the other part of it was I was mixing and matching. And the other thing that, again, I'm going back to bench management, and every day, not all of us are each day, not all of us are at 100% peak performance. So you can sort that out very quickly as a coach and understand who is really feeling it and who is not. And if they're not, maybe you've got to double shift them to get them to a higher level, or you employ a player that is not expected to play as much because they are really mentally really prepared to play that particular game or that particular moment. And I know when I'll give you a little insight into kind of the approach that Steph Amatol was playing for me in Chicago, and a new player came in and said, what about this Keenan? He says, don't have a bad warm-up and definitely don't have a bad first shift. So, you know, it's a real feel. If you're an elite or really good coach, you have a feel for what's transpiring. And also, you better have great knowledge of the officials that are working that game. And I can give you an example of Koharski and Kerry Fraser and Van Helleman and McCauley was unbelievable. John would come over. He'd have a piece of white tape on his first finger, and he would go, Mike, you got one power play, and if you misbehave, you're going to have zero power plays, or the other team's going to have five power plays. And then he goes say the same thing to the other coach. So he also tried to manage the game and let the players play and let the players decide. It was terrific.
We should note that that's John McCauley, not Wes McCauley, who is
right,
now
on his father.
I think the elite referee in the National Hockey League, and in many ways he is his father's son, Mike.
Yeah, I agree. Like he's got the same approach. He you know, we don't talk about the officials' influence enough, I don't think, because he's a good example of how he can handle all players, superstars or role players or tough players or competitive or whatever the case might be on the ice. He has a feel for the game and what's transpiring, and that's so important.
How would you coach against, and how would you coach the players, talking about McDavid and Drysdale? Let's start coaching against them. How would you defend?
Great question. I would, and you know, I can go, you can extrapolate that to the time I was coach of Philadelphia Flyers, youngest team in pro sport, against Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messier, the Edmonton Oilers, the juggernaut. So we try to employ, because in two different situations, first of all, if you got the home ice advantage, you get the last change. So, I would always double shift Poulin or Ronnie Sutter up front, and then Markel and Brad McCrimmon, for example. But you mentioned the two superstars in Edmonton. What I did is when I coached, I was known for it. I always played my best players the most. And I hear these reporters talk, oh, he's going to be tired, he's got too many minutes. And that's nonsense. Wayne Gretzky, I coached about 50 Hall of Famers. They want to get on the ice. They want to be put. There's no such thing as them being too tired. Give them the day off the next day if they need a rest. You're not playing back-to-back anymore in the NHL. We played, when I first started in that first 1987, we played 26 games in 52 nights.
Right.
26 games in 52 nights. And these people are saying, oh, we're tired. I said, are you kidding me? Mark Howell and Brad McCrae, and they 30 minutes a game. So
now you're speaking of matchups, and I was always led to believe that it was more important for the defensive pair than it was the line. Where do you stand on that?
Well, again, evaluate your skills and your players. If you've got Markel and Brad McCrimmon, yes. If you've got Chris Pronger and Al McGinnis, yes. And, you know, there was a couple of examples. Chris Chelios and Smith, for example, in Chicago. I'm pointing these pairs out because they all played over 30 minutes.
Right.
And we had great success.
But then would you even consider, And would you even consider matching lines if you could put those kind of stalwart defensive pairs out?
I would still try to match lines, yes.
For example,
Brian Leach, we win the cup. He's a superstar. And the offset is on certain situations. Instead of Bukaboom, I'd put Zubov with him. So now I got two guys who can really move the puck. And depending on who they're going to play against. So, you know, there's a lot of, if you like a chess match, if you like, but some coaches don't care and they don't pay attention to it, or they just aren't that way. Bowman, for example, I coach him. It was every second of every game, there was always something to evaluate for both of us, because both of us were doing the same things.
Do you have a greatest game? Do you remember when you were like just on it in a crucial situation?
Well, I was very fortunate. First of all, you have to have really great players to be in those situations. And you know, I coached in so many game sevens and won and lost. I won in game seven to win a Stanley Cup. I lost in game seven, our teams lost in game seven against the Oilers. So you know as well, it's your job, as I indicated in this podcast, that it's your job as the coach to be as involved and ready mentally as anyone. And I can tell you this, that, and it sounds a little bit crazy, but maybe I was crazy. I could put myself almost in a trance and evaluate, like, because I found it so difficult to do press conferences 10 minutes after the game. I was in a zone completely, where I could almost elevate myself to see what was going on.
That's, now you can't tell from I've seen you in the trance, Mike, trust me. Yeah. You can't tell me from a club team perspective, because I think you have your international hockey that's over on another little bookshelf. Right. A game seven, Rangers Canucks has to be game seven, Rangers Canucks has to be the greatest game you coached, right?
Yeah. And again, we had home ice advantage, and Pat Quinn didn't pay as much attention to matching as I would, for example, or other coaches. You know, I'll give you one more great example of that, Ron, was that game against the Jersey Devils, double overtime. So, but this game seven, the rhythm of the game, and then those face-offs in the end and the decision-making, and I'll give you two examples that people are really aware of, that Craig McTavish taking the face-off and messes the backup in the final face-off alignment with Steve Larmer out there as the forward. So none of them really played together at any time. And then the other great face-off, as you know, in Canada Cup 87, I put out Howard Chuck, God bless him, Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux, and they all turned to each other and says, well, Wayne says, I'm not taking the face-off. And Mario says, it's on the wrong side for me. And Dale says, I guess I am. But I had confidence. But Mess, and everybody looked at me like, why is Mess not out there? Because Larry Aronoff was coming out next. And I knew we scored. We still had to kill off. And Larionov, that great unit, came out. We had to we actually outchanced them in that shift. But I needed Mark to be there for that. So, you know, those are good examples. As you said, there's that international shelf and then the NHL. So it's that part of the game for coaching is one of the most exciting. If you enjoy that kind of mathematical stimulation, if you like, or evaluation. Some people don't like it that much.
Mike Keenan with us on 100% Hockey. We'll be back with more with Millard, Shannon, and Iron Mike.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hey, Mike, if you're in a playoff series, was there certain matchups where you knew you had the advantage over the opposition coach? Like, square and simple?
Well, oh, yeah. There's many times, and the other coach knows it. And your unpredictability, maybe, for example, and again, it's time and score, and the position of the faceoff. Is it in the offensive end, defensive end, neutral zone? Is it, are you leading? Are you losing? How much time is left? So you work really hard at taking any advantage you can in any situation. And like I said, some coaches don't work as hard as others at it. And so it's a skill that if you have that great skill, you can find moments where you can take advantage of what's happening on the ice.
Have you ever gone into a playoff series knowing full well you're overmatched? And what do you do about it?
Ask me about the. You pray that your goalie stands on his. I was going to say, ask me about the Oilers series. We beat the juggernaut twice for the Stanley Cup. So
you know, one was a 5-game series that should have been 4, and the other one, you know, they went back to you know they went home for game 6, and you guys won.
No, we won game six.
Oh, game five. Sorry, game five.
Game five. That's right.
Yeah. Game five, and you won.
I think, and they thought that they had played us before. They had, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think they had 7 Hall of Famers on that team. I had 1, Mark Howe.
Yeah.
And we know who they had. So I think part of it was, they thought the series would be a little bit easier based on the history that we had played in 85 against them, and they beat us, and that the series was different then, though, for 2 reasons. The NHL, in their wisdom, went 2-3-2, and I hated it because the team was too young to hang around in Edmonton for 7 days. I mean, it was just too much for them. And that's the other part. We were the youngest team in pro sport, not just hockey. And I'm hearing the comments about the young teams of Montreal and not. You can win with young kids, too. You can win. But I also had, and you asked me, how do you do this? Pray that your goal. I had a Hall of Fame or a Vezina Trophy winner in Pelle Lindbergh. God bless him. And then Ronnie Hextall stood in his head. So, you know, that's your backup plan.
Which isn't bad.
No, well, you have to rely on it. They're part of the team. But when you have that kind of disparity in terms of, you know, one Hall of Famer versus seven, your goalie must be magical. So, and they had a Hall of Fame goalie as well.
Yeah.
So it's funny you mentioned the 2-3-2 in 85, because before they both passed away, if you sat down with Al Arbour and Bill Torrey and had a beer with them, and they said, "Yeah, but you lost to the Oilers in 84," and Torrey would tell you the first thing out of his mouth is, "It was that damn 2-3-2."
Yeah.
You know, we split at home, and then we went back to Edmonton, and we played three games, I think, in 7 days.
Yes.
And it was just too hard for them to play that amount. We had 3 days off, and we had a banquet, a luncheon on one of the days, and every player had to show up. I mean,
exactly.
Hold on.
You had a luncheon in the middle of the Stanley Cup final?
Oh, yeah. There was a luncheon. And you know Slats. Slats is just sitting there laughing at them. I mean.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a real disadvantage.
Motivation and tactical preparedness. You were great at both, whether getting your team on the right track or jarring them back into focus on the motivation, the mind side of it. What's more important, X's and O's or between the ears?
Well, it's between the ears. Casey Stengel, a great baseball manager, said it's 50-50, 90% mental, 10% physical. The amount of assistance you have now in the video and the analytics, and you can bring it all into, as I call it, support, support tools, if you like. But ultimately, it's what you can set on a mental stage that makes the difference. And everyone has the skills or the tools, if you like, at their disposal, particularly now with all of the different ways that they can break plays down in ice position and zone and diagonal passes and rushes and whatever you want. You can have all the analytics you want, but you separate yourself from the rest of the teams in the league by your skill set to be mentally engaged and mentally tough. And one of the greatest competitors, and if you listen to him, and I don't know how many people in Canada can get Mark Messier on TV during these playoffs, but I was in Florida for a couple of weeks listening to Mark, and like, he's spot on. Like, he drives that point home on every broadcast. You know, you can have all the setups that you want and all the X and O's that you want, but it's your ability to understand the situation you're in and to execute, to be able to do that is a mental skill. And I'll tell a little story about Wayne Gretzky. I'm coaching him in St. Louis, and many stories, but he would always come in, first guy in every day, and sit in my office to have a coffee. And he'd say, "You know, Mario got 3 points last night." Like, this is before cell phones. I said, "How do you know that?" So he had a network of people feeding him. That drove him. Like, there's no way this kid's going to beat me in the scoring championship or whatever the case might be. Or I can also remember in a game in the playoffs that we were down 5-on-3, and I pulled goalies. I took Pelle Lindbergh out, put Bob Froese in, and Wayne came over to, and you could hear the benches at that time. They're so close. He says to Slats, what's he doing? What's going on? What should we do? So by the time they figured it out, the penalty was over. So, you know, that you just get lucky sometimes too. But, yeah, it's the mental side that separates any, whether you're watching the golf championships, it's the top players, it's their mental skills that are developed over time. And some people describe it as confidence, but it's also mental rehearsing mental experiences and learning new experiences quickly. For me, it's always the mental side.
Can you teach mental toughness and competitiveness like that?
Yes, or is
that
you natural? Can. You definitely you can? Can, yes. I mean, some people are more adept at, I just described Mess and,
right.
You know, like Chris Pronger, the two guys are like, Chris Chelios, super mean too, but, you know, and competitive. But you, that's you're talking about the and Gretzkin, the top players have that skill. And but they've learned it. They didn't have it 100%, but some are more adept at being able to have that mental toughness over others.
But is there an example of a player?
You can drag a team into it. For example, I'll give you a young player, and I mentioned him earlier, was Matteau. When he first came to me from Calgary, back then you made trades, you didn't. Cliff never told me he had a bad quad and I had to sit him out for a month to get healthy. But after he started playing, he said, I kept driving. I'd give him a short-term goal and say, this is what I want you to do, whether it's, you know, taking the puck around the boards, whatever the case, small skill set and development. But also you're going to play with Noonan and you guys are going to, and then ultimately we get to New York and I got Mac T and you guys are going to be up against the best players that they have. And, but he would tell me after, he would told me after, like, I didn't have the confidence at the beginning until I continued to be given the responsibility. And as I thought, well, the coach thinks I can do it. I guess I can do it. So he continued to get better and where it became his normal routine for his game.
Which is why you always had, no matter what team you're on, there was always three or four guys on the roster that were Keenan guys, right? Greg Gilbert, yeah. Brian Noonan.
Peter Zezo was the individual who played for me the most in all NHL games.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, but I had, I would bring many players with me that, you didn't have to train them again. They all understood Steve Larmer. They understood what we expected.
By the way, Steve Larmer should be in the Hall of Fame.
100%.
I don't know why he isn't, but he should be in the Hall of Fame. So
100%.
Finally, for me, I can't help but think about when I talk to you about coaching, the other guy I always think about is Paul Maurice. You know, you guys have had ups and downs in your career. You had to go overseas, both of you, and you went to the same franchise in the KHL, Magnitogorsk,
yes,
to resurrect your careers. And yet Paul has come back and done spectacularly in this edition of his coaching world. How from your vantage point, do you see how he has evolved and managed to be successful?
Well, it's transitional and generational adjustment. And fortunately, Paul was invited back to NHL. I never was. But I was successful in five different decades of coaching. And that's the secret. The secret is your skill and your ability to make the adaptation to the new athlete, to the new game. In both cases, we went from coaching in the NHL ice surface to the large ice surface.
Right.
So when I first got there, I said, this is a completely different game. The anaerobic versus the aerobic energy, the training of the systems had to be completely different. You've got 15 feet more on the sideboards. It's 15 feet wider. So that's a whole different game. So the answer is the adaptation that you can make personally to educate yourself, to be able to make the evaluations in the generational changes and in some part the changes in the game, the rules, for example, and other aspects of it.
Could you step in and coach today?
Well, I coached 2 years ago. That's a lot. No, I mean, I've been home from Italy 1 year after surgery. So, I could coach I was able to coach this new generation. Yes. Yes. And, you know, I never got invited back. So I've never had any expectations. They thought I was too intimidating or maybe intimidating the executives. I don't know. But
you're a scary guy, Mike. You're a scary guy.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, case in point, I was the first coach to win in the KHL. It wasn't the first North American, for example. Right. And I was 64 years old, I think, 65, somewhere around there. So, it's interesting, I think, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, I think John Tortorella just said, I lost interest. If you lose interest, you can't be effective. You have to have the passion, and you've seen it out of me as a coach. You have to have that to be able to do this job at this level. And, you know, Paul, and I'm proud of Craig Berube too. I coach Craig. And I think I've told you that story about he's a tough guy. And in our first game against Detroit, we're in Philadelphia, and he picks a fight with Proby. Proby beats the crap out of him. I come in, he's on the medical table, and he says, honest to God, Mike, I can fight. And I really, really impressed with your courage, but I don't know about your judgment. So I said, you didn't have to fight the toughest guy in the league on your first fight. So anyway, he's a solid citizen, and he studied and has studied the game well. You know, lots of people think that, it's tougher for the superstars because it comes naturally to them. It's the role player, and goalies watch the game become coaches. Sure. Because they're watching what's going on.
So all these openings right now, why not you?
Pardon me?
All these openings right now, why not you?
Hey, you guys have to know that I'm alive. We can do the podcast. The rest of the league doesn't even know I exist. So,
hey, listen, we can find anybody anywhere, Mike. You know that.
You can run, but you can't hide.
That's right.
Of the eight teams left right now, who do you like?
That's a great question because it's so competitive, but
it is.
I'm not going to ever step away from Connor McDavid. I coached at a charity game in Barrie, Ontario, and I had it was a fundraiser. Patrick Brown would put on a politician and sell out in Barrie, and I had Dougie Gilmore and Mike Gardner and a bunch of guys on my team, and on the other team it was split. But before the game, this young kid came up to me and said, Mr. Keenan, really, really appreciate you letting me play today. I said, oh, no problem. So, we're trying to raise money here for the community. So we go out, and this kid jumps on the ice for the first shift, and I turned to Gilmore and said, who the hell is that? He said, he's the next best player in the world. I said, what's his name? He said, Connor McDavid. After the game, he came in to thank me again for letting him play. I said, you are our best player. So great story, but that's how respectful he was. And I liken him after coaching the best player in the world, Wayne Gretzky. And, you know, that's not a slight to all the other Hall of Famers I coached and superstars, but this guy he can put the team on his back. And if he gets some goaltending and he gets the rest of them engaged, and he's on a mission now because it's a learning process. He lost last year. He lost. And that is part of his motivation this year. They were down 2-0 to LA, a very good team. They win 4 straight. They go in last night to Vegas, very good team. They win.
Yeah.
And you can't, that's this, these elite superstars, Sidney did it in Pittsburgh. I had marketed it in New York and in Edmonton, and you need that, particularly when the competition now with the way the financial structure of teams are set up, you need something special. And he's a difference maker.
You brought up LA and Edmonton. A lot of people were saying coaching turned that series with both the challenge and then ice distribution, which you like loading up, but Jim Hiller went to the extreme. Was that fair on Hiller?
I don't know what the criticisms were. Maybe you can let me know a little bit, but
well, he went down to three lines, and he played his fourth line 2 minutes a game for a whole game, and then wondered why his guys were tired.
Well, you know, how many minutes did that compare? Let's say Kopitar. How did his minutes?
But the game went 17 minutes into overtime too, Mike. That was the other issue. I mean, it was not a regular 60-minute game.
Right. Only he can evaluate that. That being the coach. So it's circumstantial. And one thing I would ask the coaches today, oftentimes I know home and away and matching, but if you go back to game 7 last year with the Florida Panthers and Edmonton Oilers, and you got to be careful of circumstantial developments in a game. Oilers get a penalty. They didn't start Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid never got on the ice until there was 5 minutes gone in the first period.
Right.
Or six. And it was circumstantial. So, you know, you've got to put that in your mind that things can crop up where you can't get the people on the ice that you want immediately. So maybe, you know, and maybe they learned from that as well. I don't know. But that's just an example of how things, the dynamics of hockey games is incredible. And you have to be prepared for every single possible scenario.
Can't let you go without asking you, who's your favorite coach to watch right now? Who you sit there as a coach and watch and admire them handle a game?
Well, I would think that Paul Maurice is amongst that group because he won, and that's a very important part of the criteria and the way he handles his bench. And I'm not a fan of hockey. That's a problem I have, because when I watch a game, I'm evaluating everything that's going on.
Yeah.
And I'll be saying, why did he do that? So and it's an interesting part that some people go to stand and applause and some people go to sit and evaluate. So I don't know.
You're the evaluator.
Yeah. Definitely. And when I watch games, I'm not watching as a fan. I'm watching what's transpiring of shift to shift.
Between me watching games with Mike, when we watched games, it was either criticizing the coach or criticizing the producer. So,
yeah, why did he take that shot of that? The angle is terrible.
Right. Thanks for this, Mike.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. Have a great day. I'm up here in the Great White North now and enjoying Georgian Bay and the Canadian. Enthusiasm. The thing that's really interesting for me is I'm back in Ontario now, and everywhere I go, they got Toronto Maple Leaf gear on. So it's
terrific. Yes, they do.
So, you know, and I was living in Florida for a little bit in the winter, and everybody had all their Florida gear on. So it's fantastic that the game has evolved like this. This part of the country has always been Toronto Maple Leafs, except here in the north. There's a lot of French Canadians here, and it was either Montreal or Toronto, so it's a split. But now that Toronto's in and Montreal's out, it's all Toronto.
Do you know yet if the parade's going through Georgian Bay or or?
I think they ordered it down Young Street, didn't they?
Okay. I wasn't sure if that had been finalized.
Or is it Portage in Maine?
It could be Portage in Maine this year, big boy.
Yeah, or it could be down the Edmonton Mall.
Yeah. Hey, don't leave the Las Vegas Strip out of it.
I'm talking about Canada.
Yes. Thanks, great Mike. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Have a great day. Ciao.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
I told you, he thinks he can still coach.
No, you kind of forced that on him.
He said he hadn't been invited back. So it opened the door. Did it not?
Listen, the only head coach to have won the Gagarin Cup and the Stanley Cup.
Mm.
That's the name of the KHL trophy.
KHL. Because of the astronaut, right?
Right. Yeah, the guy who was the first man in space. Yuri Gagarin.
You talked about those Oilers and Flyers Stanley Cup finals. That was a matchup of wits, wasn't it? With Glenn Sather against Iron Mike. Yeah.
I was lucky enough to have a front row on both of those series. So, and the famous story was, Mike was every once in a while would in the 87 series would steal the Stanley Cup. And so it got to the point where he would get the cup and put it in the room and say, "Here's the cup. You can't touch it, but you have to win it to touch it." He was a motivational guy. And so by the seventh game, Jim Gregory, who was the senior vice president of the National Hockey League, was the Coley Campbell of his time, was managing the series. And we wanted the Stanley Cup to put on the set on our network. And Jim wouldn't give it to me. And then he said, "I'm not even going to give it to Mike Keenan. Mike Keenan's not getting it." But what Keenan did was, because they took the cup out and they put it in a room and they were polishing it up for game seven, Keenan took the box that the cup was in and stuck it in the middle of the room and said to his players, "The cup's inside. You can't even look at it right now, but it's in this box." Just to try to motivate them. Oh, yeah. Mike would try everything. Mike would try everything.
Now I'm mad. Can we get him back? I want him to walk us through that story.
There are tons of stories like that. I can tell you that. So yeah.
It's funny. Okay. At a Memorial Cup, I can't remember which one it was, but Bill Stewart was coaching Barry. And I had him in for a pregame interview into our little studio at the rink. And the Memorial Cup was behind me, just sitting there because we were going to do some beauty shots. And he said, "Hey, can I borrow that for a second?" I'm like, "What?" So he did the exact same thing. He took it into his room, put it in, and said, "That's what you're playing for. It's right there. It's that close to you, but you can't touch it. You can't get close to it yet."
That's right out of the Keenan playbook, 1987.
Yeah. Now, I always thought that was great. From a mental aspect, but
Mike Keenan had done it a long time before. So now those stories would get around to coaches.
But after game seven, they wouldn't give him the cup.
No,
but he still used the box.
Yeah. So. Well, he finally got it. So the names.
Okay. Tampa. Tampa Lightning.
Lightning, yes. Not Lightning.
Colorado Avalanche.
Okay.
Minnesota Wild.
Okay.
And release the Kraken.
Ah. Wow. I wonder which one people will have the most trouble with. Because Kraken's the newest, but it's talked about a lot. I'm betting the Wild.
What do you mean most trouble? What do you mean trouble with? Like guessing?
Yeah. You come up with people come up with three. Like, what's the last one? What's the last one?
I actually had trouble with the Lightning. That was the one that took me the longest to remember. So,
Avalanches, Wilds, Lightnings, Kraken. Yeah, Krakens, nothing worked. Krakens, maybe. Could work. Anything surprise you out of Vegas and Edmonton?
No, because this is right out of the new Edmonton Oilers songbook.
I don't know how they're doing
concept
that.
of not playing rope-a-dope, but you know, finding a way in the third periods. And look at the guys who scored, Darren, Corey Perry, Connor Brown, Zach Hyman. Well, you know, McDavid, no goals again. Two assists, but no goals. Leon's goal was a lucky goal. Let's face it. It was a lucky goal, pure and simple.
Oh, I loved it. He was trying to bank it. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah. You know, he's a brilliant player and is thinking that way all the time. And it caught Aiden Hill off guard. But it's we have talked all along, and like even on your show on radio in Vegas last night, we talked about, and don't be surprised about the Oilers' depth now. The Oilers' depth is going to be a factor in this series. And it was. It was. The other series, I mean, Carolina should have won after one period. And Washington didn't even deserve to be in the game. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they got it to overtime was amazing to me. And if the Capitals had been able to steal that one, I would have told you they were a team of destiny. Because Carolina dominated on every level. And you knew that when you listened to Spencer Carberry's post-game press conference.
He wasn't showing off his Wayne Gretzky Titan PMP stick.
No. You know, I have this belief that Spencer Carberry is the nice, easygoing guy in the world until last night's press conference. Yep. Nope.
It finally happened.
No.
You know, that was mom and dad saying, "You kids, you finally pushed me too far." Right. And I'm losing my temper. That's what's happening.
Well, so and the other message for the media is let's be smart about this. Let's just, because Spencer's a great talker, and you could throw softballs to Spencer and he would talk eloquently for 2 minutes. But you know what? We're down to business now, and now you're going to have to work to get good questions that aren't yes and no answers.
Or statements. I don't like statements. At coaches' press conferences, ask a question. Not a statement, and let them react to it. On a podcast, we're engaging in conversation. I understand that. I let you away with that. But
you let me away with it. That is so kind of you. So kind.
But in a press conference,
I didn't realize you were so benevolent about that. Oh my God, we got to go now. We're done. Say goodbye.
My favorite moment of all time on 100% Hockey right there. Goodbye.
Don't talk to me.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.